Welcome to the Bull Show. It's Sunday, December 4th, 2016. I'm your host, Nils. And Mitch, can you confirm that we are in fact recording?
We are in fact recording. I want to apologize to all the people that are waiting. I know the streets were watching. They were ready for the next podcast, and I unfortunately deleted it. So I'm
People were driving home from their Thanksgiving plans, waiting to listen to the bullshit last week, and we failed them. I feel like we're like the JaVale McGee of podcasts.
Yeah.
Like, by now, after 4 years of recording, we'd have this thing figured out. But
a lot of highs, a lot of lows. More lows than highs.
Also on the line, it's SB Nation's Ricky O'Donnell.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Ricky, so I heard on a recent episode of the Ringer's NBA show with Chris Vernon, you got a shout-out from Kevin O'Connor. That's basically the same thing as the Bull Show getting a shout-out, right?
I give all of the credit to that, to the Bull Show. You guys have really helped mold my my developing media empire, so I'll credit to Mitch and Nils.
We're making stars over here, man. You should see Eugene just doing it big in the world of energy just off that that Bull Show swag.
We're either making stars or I'm just ready to ride off of people's coattails, so... Hey, well, guys, this past week in Bulls basketball, it was a throwback, a tribute to the last couple of years, because the Bulls got up for one of the better teams in the league, beating LeBron and the Cavs Friday night on national television, but lose to two teams they probably should have beaten in the Lakers and the Mavs. This was like watching 2015 all over again. Bulls winning the marquee matchup, but failing to slay the bums, which we know is a recipe for missing the playoffs. So, gentlemen, what I wanted to do was start today's discussion on the Bulls bench, because it got exposed this past week as one of the league's worst. There's an obvious drop-off in recent weeks when the starters come out and the second unit comes in. Ricky, can you tell me what's going wrong with the Bulls bench and how would you fix it, if it is fixable?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. And you got to start with the injuries, because right now you look, they're without Michael Carter-Williams, they're without Doug McDermott. The Bulls are still undefeated with MCW. Don't forget that point. Best team
in the
lineup. And, you know, with MCW, even though we still don't really know much about how he's going to fit in the Bulls, because we only saw him for two games, I believe, you know, that is like sort of a starting caliber point guard, I would say. To have him coming off the bench will just be a big boost to the bench unit. Gives him another athletic defender who can, you know, match up with multiple positions. And then McDermott, I mean, you look right now at the Bulls' numbers. They're last in the league in three-point makes per game, and they're 28th in three-point percentage. So obviously not having your top wing reserve and your top shooter available is a pretty big deal. I think it's good, definitely, that the Bulls have taken sort of a cautious approach with McDermott coming back from this concussion. But there's no denying right now that they need McDermott and they need him playing well. And they could also use Carter Williams to really infuse the bench with a little bit of talent. And then after that, I think that, you know, I think Hoiberg has to look in the mirror on a lot of these rotation choices, because we've talked for a few weeks about Bobby Portis getting minutes over Cristiano Felicio. I don't think it's any coincidence that Portis was DMP'd in the Cavs win. You know, the Bulls are able to pick up their best victory of the season when Bobby Portis didn't play whatsoever in that game. I think that if you look at the roster top to bottom, they do have sort of the pieces to make a good bench, to have, you know, productive bench units. But I think that, you know, Hoiberg's rotations have been a little questionable, and certainly the injuries to MCW and McDermott play a big part in that, too.
Are you just campaigning for your Brazilian son, Cristiano Felicio, to get more burn? Because that's what it sounds like. So it sounds like you're saying that maybe the bench isn't as bad as it is once the Bulls get back two of their better rotation players in MCW and Doug McDermott. Mitch, do you agree?
I totally agree. I think Ricky's right on here. You know, you look at the first two games, there's only two games, but Doug played 22 minutes in the first game, 27 minutes in the second game. MCW played 17 minutes in the first game, 23 minutes in the second game. That's 39 and 50 minutes. That the Bulls are missing right now. I think two really good bench options. So you take those options off the table. A guy like Isaiah Cannon, who I think was brought in here to be a rotational player, is the first guy off the bench. You have the Bulls kind of struggling to figure out their role with Portis, and you still see Denzel Valentin coming, still not able to kind of, you know, establish his spot on the bench. I think this bench is going to look very different at the end of the season as it does now, and I wouldn't freak out about it. I think the Bulls, like Ricky said, have the potential for a really good bench.
Nope, I'm going to go the hot take route. I think the Bulls got to make a trade, particularly for a frontline player. Portis and Mirotić do not look like NBA caliber players right now, which of course would make it difficult for them to be dealt. But like I said before, if the Bulls can deal Tony Snow, then in the words of Kevin Garnett, anything is possible! So, you know, I think a trade is feasible because you're not looking for a star, right? You're looking for a serviceable role player to take Portis and Mirotić's minutes. You know, trading for someone like Boogie, that'd be out of the question. But if you're trading for someone like, I don't know, Greg Monroe, Nerlens Noel, I feel like that's more of a realistic possibility. What are you guys' thoughts on trading Portis and Mirotić?
Well, I think that, you know, Mirotić is one of the biggest question marks facing the future of the franchise because he's going to be a free agent next year. You saw Ryan Anderson, I think, signed 4 years, $80 million for the Rockets this offseason. Mirotić is a lot younger than Ryan Anderson. Ryan Anderson's had a better career, no doubt about it. But Mirotić, you know, he's got more upside. He's younger for sure. I think Mirotić is going to get a huge payday. And so the Bulls have to think right now, like, yo, we know what we've been getting from this guy since he's come to the organization. Do we really want to invest that much to keep him around, or do we let him walk for nothing? So
I'll answer that. It's time to take out the Miro trash.
and I'll say this. You think about Ricky's point that Mirotić is going to be a pretty expensive commodity. Same thing with Taj Gibson. He's going to be a pretty significant commodity, so expensive commodity. So I think that explains why Portis is getting this kind of long leash, right? Because he might be the last man standing come next year. The Bulls have got a lot of money tied up. They may want to get active in free agency with a little bit of money that they, well, not a little bit of money. Let's say they have $22, $23 million left. They may want to put that somewhere else. And that's a lot of money is going to be coming with re-signing players. So, listen, I don't know. I think that's the reason why you see the Bulls wanting this Portis thing to happen. And that's the reason why they're extending his minutes when he would be benched if he weren't a player that was, you know, the first-round draft pick last year.
Yeah, Portis certainly is not playing well right now. I think it's been really just obvious from watching his minutes on the floor. And super frustrating for Bulls fans, because remember where we were at a year ago? We thought the Bulls' biggest problem was that Bobby Portis didn't play enough.
Yeah.
Now it's obvious he just hasn't gotten any better. He really hasn't made any improvements in this last year. Just, you know, in a lot of my social circles, I'll hear Bulls fans say, got to get rid of Bobby Portis, got to trade his ass. I mean, you have to remember, they do have him for 2 more years. For basically free on a rookie deal. He was the 22nd pick. He's not making any money, right? So when you go back to Mitch's point about the fact that Gibson's contract's up, Mirotić's contract is up, I'm fine with just like burying Portis on the bench for now and being like, yo, let's check it out in year three. Let's check it out in year four. Maybe he can still be a good player. I'm not totally ready to write off Bobby Portis as a non-NBA player yet. I do think that right now he isn't capable of handling the minutes that Fred Hoiberg's giving him. But that's fine. Scale it back. I think he's just 21 years old, right? Like, give it another crack in year three and year four. Because in year two, Bobby Portis, he's not showing the improvement that the Bulls need him to show.
Well, here's the question. If you don't believe that you're going to re-sign Taj Gibson and you don't believe you're going to re-sign Nico Mirotić, shouldn't you be giving Portis minutes that, you know, just even if he's not playing really well? What do you think about that?
No, because I think, well, this doesn't really answer your question, but I do feel like the Bulls have to sign one of either Taj or Nico. And while Nico may, this is definitely up for debate, but he may have a higher upside just because of his experience or lack thereof and being a younger player. I think you definitely have to sign Taj Gibson, especially the way that he's produced this past year, the first time him being featured as a starter. So I don't know. I don't think that that necessarily explains why Portis is getting as much burn as he is. I think it Hoiberg is thinking that he's a much more versatile defender. Again, that is not something I agree with, but because he can get that out there a little bit on the perimeter more so than, say, you know, Robin Lopez, I'm thinking that's why he's being getting the minutes that he is.
One of the interesting things I think that we're seeing, and there's this, you know, I think, I don't remember if he played in the Dallas game like this, but Nico at the five, you know, he plays some 5 minutes, played Butler at the four. He's been playing Valentin at the four for the last couple of games. Do you guys think that that's another space to kind of get Nico minutes, to kind of get him out of his funk?
Well, I'd rather see him at the five than the three. Like, someone should dig up the Bulls record when Mirotić plays the three. He started at the three last night against the Mavericks with Wade resting on the second end of a back-to-back. And as soon as I saw that, I had a suspicion that the Bulls were probably going to get trucked in that game, despite the fact that the Mavericks had three wins on the year. That's exactly what happened. Every time they try to put Mirotić at the three, that's just classic square peg and round hole, right? It never works. There's like 3 years of evidence to the fact that that is a really dumb idea with multiple coaches. Thibodeau did it too in his last year when he had Mirotić. So, you know, personally, I think that Mirotić just has to play the four. That's where, you know, his talents are best used. Certainly the Bulls need, they just need shooters on the floor. They have no shooters. I mean, last in the league in 3-point makes. We knew this would be a problem coming into the season. The first couple weeks, I think that it was sort of covered up a little bit by just heroic Jimmy Butler performances and vintage Wade. Now, you know, it's starting to rear its head a little bit more. But, you know, it's on Mirotić, too, to make an impact. Like, right now, I've been making jokes that Mirotić's defense is better than his offense after he had those two stops in the Cavs game. He also shot, like, 0 for 8 in that game, or he started 0 for 8. It's like, what's he giving you on the offensive end at this point to instill confidence in you that he can be that player? It's been very frustrating.
I don't want Mirotić at the 3. I don't want Mirotić at the 5. I don't want Mirotić in a Bulls uniform. I mean, those two defensive plays in the Cavs game notwithstanding, there are times when I'm watching Bulls games, and I'm an undersized, out of shape, haven't played basketball in a month and a half, guard. And there's times where I think I could be just as effective on defense as Nikolai Mirotić.
The answer because to that is no, you could not.
I mean, as I've tweeted, Nikolai Mirotić is a traffic cone on defense with a beard. I mean, he offers very little resistance. I forget who it was. I think it was Julius Randle who just bullied his way down the lane, and Mirotić ended up in like the fifth row. I mean, he offers absolutely no resistance. And I kind of want to go on a little Nico Mirotić rant right now. Let's because
do it. Tell him how you really feel. Tell him how you really feel.
Gotta go. He's gotta go, man. Like the Nico Mirotić experience, and I've tried so hard to you could probably dig up the tapes, and there's probably at one point that I thought he was, you know, Dirk Light. Well, he's become more Bargnani heavy. Like, he's so awful. And here's the thing. The Nico Mirotić experience has been arguably the worst in the last 10 years of Bulls basketball. I'll go ahead and throw that out there. And this is a lot, probably more on a personal level, because I feel like anytime something bad has happened, anytime I think of Nico, I associate him with something bad that's happened to the organization. I remember the day back in sometime in July 2014 when Melo decided to stay in New York after flirting with free agency. I swear, it was about 5 minutes after report surfaced that he was re-upping with the Knicks. My boss stopped by my desk and asked if I had some time to work on a consulting project with Bulls. Now, I work in international tax, and little did I know that project that I was being requested for was helping bring Nico to the Bulls. Now, of course, I couldn't, you know, relay the information because of client confidentiality issues. Hopefully, I'm not giving it to the risk right now. But the reason why I mentioned that is because even though that was a pretty cool project to be a part of, and bringing Nico over from Real Madrid, I still associate my disappointment with, you know, losing out on Melo with bringing Nico over. So that was one instance where I knew that the Nico Mirotić era had already started off with the wrong foot. Secondly, the other signature moment of Nico's career as a Bull was when he airballed and then inexplicably clotheslined Iman Shumpert in Game 4 of the 2015 East semifinals against the Cavs. People forget that he took double digits at that point. And I remember after those subsequent plays, it kicked up the Bulls' momentum. And from that point on, the Bulls haven't won a playoff game since. So those are the two things that I associate Nico Mirotić with. And you combine that with how trash it's been, it's time to take out the
Mirotić. So basically what you're telling me is you just blame yourself for for all this. That's not a half humble brag, half I blame myself for bringing Nico to Chicago.
I guess, you know, just like this podcast is definitely associated with Derrick Rose tearing out or blowing out his knees, I associate myself with you know, being up with Nico coming over and just basically spelling the Bulls' demise.
You know, I had a giant argument. Not a giant argument. I always Mark from Bulls Confidential, I love to antagonize on Twitter. We always talk. And, you know, we were talking about this whole thing about Nico at the four. And I agree with Ricky that Nico's best position is at four. But, you know, he really puts both of these coaches in a bad position, Tom Thibodeau and now Hoiberg. If you're not going to be the best power forward and you're going to be coming off the bench and you're a bench player, you're going to have to be a little bit more versatile than just playing the four. You're going to have to be able to play a little five. You have to be able to play a little three. And it's so frustrating to me that he can't just be just a little bit more versatile, not be such, you know, I don't want you being a starting three, but I don't want us to lose every time you are. So, you know.
Right now, Nico can't shoot. He can't defend.
Yeah, two for his last 16 at the three-point line is a tough situation for a guy who's providing stretch play.
You know what's really frustrating about him, too? I feel like the talent has never really been in question with Mirotić. To me, it's like a great example that there's more to the game than like height and shooting ability, right? Yeah. It seems like whenever there's a young player in the draft, the first thing you ask is, does he have a jump shot? Can he stretch the floor? Well, it shows you that there's much more to the game, I think, than just like that base level of scouting, because Mirotić's biggest problem is just he doesn't like think the game. He doesn't have the head for the game, really. And you can say the same thing about Portis. Portis obviously tries hard. I don't think that Portis is like comprehending things as fast as he needs to. Same with Mirotić. I would say Mirotić is a very low basketball IQ, low feel for the game. He does how many just boneheaded things a game? I mean, we watched this with Snell for a few years. Now we've been watching it with Mirotić for a few years. You know, that's why you hear people say things like, I can defend better than Nikola Mirotić.
6'11" Nikola Mirotić.
Hey, Ricky, you just described why I'm not in the league right now. I mean, I have the high basketball IQ. I have the mental toughness. I just don't have the physical
and the confidence.
We know that Nils is officially a dad now, because that's the most dad take I could possibly hear, that I could defend better than this NBA player. Great dad take.
All right, let's move on to something a bit more pleasant than Nico. We're going to move on to this new weekly segment called Are the Bulls Good? It should have debuted last week, but of course, as we talked about, we lost the audio. Are the Bulls Good? We're going to look at evidence from the past week to determine if this Bulls team is legit, because their record to date has exceeded expectations. Is it smoke and mirrors, or are the Bulls actually good? And so for this episode, I want to focus in on that Cavs game, because it was the lone highlight of the week, where the Bulls took care of business against the defending champs. Guys, here we go again. My favorite annual tradition of getting suckered in by a regular season game, thinking that the Bulls could actually beat LeBron in the playoffs. Mitch, we'll start with you. Did that win give you any more confidence that the Bulls are an actual threat this year in the Eastern Conference to LeBron and the Cavs?
Listen, there has to be some type of change in circumstance for the Bulls to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. But, you know, those things do tend to happen, right? You know, you saw what happened in the NBA Finals with Draymond Green kicking somebody in the nuts and getting kicked out of the game, and Steph Curry being injured. So you never know what's going to happen. If, you know, at full strength, there's no chance that this Bulls team has to beating the Cleveland Cavaliers. But what that win does tell you is that the Chicago Bulls, I think, can beat an elite team. There was a big question, you know, where's the Bulls' elite wins? You know, people didn't like the Utah win or the Portland win. You know, we ended up losing to the Clippers. And although, you know, the Cavs had a horrible schedule, you know, they were definitely coming off a really tough stretch. They gave the Bulls their best shot. You know, LeBron played the entire second half, and the Bulls gave them their best shot. Their starters minutes were all over 35, I think, with the exception of possibly Lopez. So, listen, it shows you that the Bulls are a legit team, shows you that the Bulls are good. Maybe it doesn't mean that they're going to, you know, get to the Eastern Conference Finals. But, you know, I think it starts to answer that internal question about people had, like, is it just all smoke and mirrors?
Ricky, yeah. Where do you stand?
For me, I just want the Bulls to get to that point again. Like, it's been a few years since I've had my heart ripped out by LeBron James in the playoffs, and I'm ready for it to happen again. It's only happened four times throughout my 20s. I need one last time. It's just been like, that's the bar where you need to get to, right? Like, if the Bulls were able to get to a point where they're playing the Cavs and put up a tough fight in the playoffs, as a fan, I would have to say I'd be, like, pretty satisfied with that. As long as they played tough and didn't roll over the way they did during Thibodeau's last year, the last time they played the Cavs, I was at that game six. And to me, that was one of the most disappointing, not only Bulls performances, but just Chicago sports performances I can remember. Because that's when you knew that, you know, not only was Thibodeau probably going to be gone, but just, like, that core just really wasn't working out. I always circle back to that game six. I would love for them to have another chance at it, just for, like, a little bit of redemption, to put up a better fight. I don't think they can win. Maybe if Kyrie gets hurt, maybe if Love gets hurt. Granted, they were both hurt last time. The Bulls still lost in six. But I do think that win gave me a little bit of confidence that, you know, maybe they could get back to that point again where they could be the team that gives Cleveland his best shot.
Yeah, I see both sides of the coin here because on one hand, I'm still not completely convinced if I just look at that game. Because, and Mitch, you had mentioned this in a group chat that we had, the Cavs looked tired, you know, playing on the second night of a back-to-back. I don't know, it seemed like we didn't get the complete LeBron defensive, you know, juggernaut that he can be. You know, he let Wade get by him a couple times, and maybe that speaks more to Wade having just another gear. And, you know, history suggests that these games are just completely meaningless in trying to gauge how well a team will do in the playoffs. Obviously, the Bulls have had their fair share of regular season success against LeBron. I don't know. But regardless, I'm going to be borderline irrational here for a minute and call out a few good signs from Friday's game that suggest, you know, maybe this could be the year. I mean, the Cubs did it. Maybe the Bulls can do it. I talked about Dwayne Wade. Maybe he just has another gear against LeBron. I'd love to see those two go up against each other in a playoff matchup. I don't think they've had a seven-game series against each other. Have they? No, I don't think so. And it just seems like Wade brings his best level of competition going up against LeBron. Jimmy Butler, who I don't think we've yet mentioned on this episode, he's one of the two players in the league that I believe can legitimately guard LeBron, the other being Kawhi. Jimmy's just ridiculously phenomenal against LeBron in isolation. There were two plays, one against LeBron, one against Kyrie. The one against Kyrie, he ended up just packing his shot and causing a turnover. LeBron always seems to struggle, at least going one-on-one against Jimmy. So hopefully that's a good sign if they were ever to meet in the playoffs. The Bulls had something like 60 points in the paint against the Cavs. I don't think it's completely outrageous that the Bulls could do that again. The Cavs don't have a rim protector. I think Mozgov was their only guy that could really defend the rim last year. Of course, he's now in L.A. And I think the Bulls could beat them up down low, which is pretty funny when I always thought that this is a strategy that you see more so from Tom Thibodeau than a Fred Hoiberg team. And then lastly, you know, Kevin Love, he's a guy that seems to always struggle against the Bulls. I think a big part of that is just Taj Gibson and his defense. Taj is a guy that's so versatile on defense that he can give Love problems both on the perimeter and down low. So that's evidence to suggest that the Bulls would at least be competitive against the Cavs. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I think we have to think about what our question is, right? I think in years past, our question was, could the Bulls beat the Cavs? I think the question we're trying to figure out now with this Bulls team is, could this team get to the Cavs? And, you know, we'll see.
It's all about managing expectations, I guess.
Yeah. Are we going to talk about the debacle on Saturday?
I mean, I don't really have too many notes from it other than it's kind of what I expected without Dwayne Wade in the lineup and Nico filling in for him. But if you guys have any thoughts, feel free to share.
I mean, I would just say, I think folks should probably relax on that. It seems like there were people that were like personally offended that the Bulls lost to Dallas on Saturday. And it seems like it came from some of the same people that kind of were really against Tom Thibodeau and thought that, you know, the minutes were, you know, driving the players, you know, crazy. I mean, the Bulls played 40 minutes against Gibson, 42 minutes with Butler, 36 with Rondo, 37 with Wade against Cleveland. I don't understand why it wouldn't be expected. I think probably everybody on this podcast expected a loss. That didn't bother me at all. Did the Dallas loss bother you guys at all?
It bothered me in a sense because Dallas is terrible, right? They had three wins coming into the game.
They were the worst team in the league.
Yeah, Dirk still isn't playing. He was out that game. So it's like, that's a game you just should win based on pure talent, you would hope. It was also more evidence, I think, that like, they just didn't compete very hard in that game, right? Like, I remember right at the tip-off, the announcer said something. Stacey King, I think, said something that was like, you know, you come out in this game and you just blitz them from the opening tip. That's how you get your rest. You just run them off the floor, you know, create a short game, basically, for the starters, let the bench take over. And that's the exact opposite of what happened. They were down, like, 11-2 from the opening tip-off of that. They just didn't really compete. And, you know, yes, they were tired. I think that was their fourth game in 5 days, right? Something like that. Or third game in 4 days, or, you know, something along those lines. But, I mean, I was disappointed in the loss. I didn't think it was crushing, and it's very easy to get over because there's going to be more games next week. And, you know, in the NBA, you always have another chance to redeem yourself.
Yeah. Honestly, the Lakers loss bothered me more than the Mavericks loss, because the Lakers loss, you were coming off what, like 4 days of rest, first game back at the United Center after the circus trip. The Lakers don't have D'Angelo Russell or Nick Young. That one was a bit more surprising, especially because the Bulls were up, I think, by 14 points towards the end of the first quarter and still managed to lose. So that was more frustrating than the Dallas loss.
Yeah, I was at that game, and I think the Bulls played pretty hard that game. They played really excellent defense. That was a game where the shots that should have been falling weren't. I think just in an 82-game season, those type of games are going to happen. Multiple shots, multiple key shots just rimming out. I agree with you, Nils. That was probably more frustrating than the Dallas game, but I don't know if I would take a ton from it. Just kind of, ghetto bad luck on that one.
Ricky, give me your bull of the week.
I guess I'm going to go with Gibson, because he was so good against Cleveland, yeah. Started 8-for-8. It seems like Taj always dunks 50% harder when he plays against LeBron, which I, as a fan, certainly appreciate. Taj Gibson's the best. He's always been the best. And to see him, really give his best year of his career at age, 31, I think now, after everything he's been through, finally gets that starting nod. It's been awesome to see him. So happy for Taj. And I want nothing more than for Taj to get all of the accolades and all of the money this next year, because the dude deserves it.
Yeah, spent so many years coming off the bench, not complaining. Great to see him get the opportunity to shine.
I agree. I was talking to my brother-in-law about we're watching the Dallas game, and he just said Taj is a professional. He's just a pro. He just brings it. So I have no argument here. Bull of the week for me too.
Let's wrap things up with a look ahead and a look around the league. Bulls play the Blazers, Pistons, Spurs, and Heat this week. All home games except for Detroit. Mitch, how many games do the Bulls win this week?
I'm always wrong with this. I'll say 3.
Pretty optimistic, Ricky?
I'll play 2. I'll pick 2. I just feel like Andre Drummond always kills them. That's a tough matchup for him. Maybe Lopez will be able to slow him down a little bit. He is a little stronger inside than previous Bulls centers, but yeah, I don't know. I'll say 2. They got Reggie Jackson back now. It's always a tough game.
Yeah. Pistons, I was just going to mention that Reggie Jackson's supposed to come back tonight for the Pistons. I don't know. I feel like maybe I'm reverse jinxing it if I predict that the Bulls are going to win maybe one of these games. Or I should go with 2, because I think they're going to take care of business against the Blazers and the Heat. But Pistons and Spurs, obviously two of the tougher teams that, the Bulls wouldn't be surprised if they let us down. But speaking of the Pistons, let me ask you, Mitch, who do you have right now as the best team in the Central Division outside of the Cavs? Because when I look at the Pistons, Pacers, Bucks, they all have very good young talent. And I came up with this question just because there's a lot of Giannis hype right now. Listening to a lot of NBA podcasts this past week, Giannis is showing out, looking like a potential superstar. Who do you fear the most right now in the Central Division that doesn't have LeBron?
So who do I fear as a Bulls fan, or who are of the four teams the best teams?
Who's the best?
I think the Bulls are the best team.
Really?
Yeah, I think the Bulls are better than Milwaukee, Detroit, and Indiana.
Ricky?
Man, I don't know. I want to say the Bulls. I think it's mostly matchup-based, but I'll go with the Bulls, though, because I think, especially if we're talking about in a 7-game series, having Wade and Butler, I think that just trumps whatever anyone else is throwing out there. So, yeah, Bulls.
Yeah, I feel like the Bulls are perhaps better this year. The future years, I'm a little worried about just because of how much young talent these other teams have. Speaking of Central Division, there was a matchup between the Bucks and Cavs on Tuesday where the Cavs' J.R. Smith managed to give up a dunk to Tony Snell, our beloved Tony Snell, because he was busy dapping up friend Jason Terry, who was sitting on the Bucks bench. So as part of the fast break, I wanted to ask you guys, and we'll start with you, Mitch, what's the most ridiculous thing you've done on defense while playing pickup basketball?
Probably tried to play defense.
Wow, we totally just had a mind meld there, because that's totally what I was expecting you to say. Just trying to play defense. We both are believers in that defense is for suckers. Yeah. And J.R. Smith, what I guess would be our model representative of that. Ricky, can you top that answer?
Yeah, sometimes we'll like have music, like a boombox going, you know, while we play. And occasionally I've been like changing the song rather than actually playing defense, because what's more important? Like we all agree, defense is for role players. Someone else can do it. I had to get the music straight before we can start thinking about
playing. I'm trying to give y'all these buckets to a soundtrack.
All right, last question. The Warriors' Draymond Green, he caught a flagrant foul for his leg coming down on James Harden's head on Thursday. This, of course, isn't the first or fourth time Draymond's kicks have gotten him in trouble. So I'll ask you first, Ricky. Draymond Green's flailing legs, dirty or natural?
Dirty, definitely dirty. I think that Draymond Green's a genius, right? Like, that's a guy with super high basketball IQ. He knows exactly what he's doing at all times. Even his comments afterwards, he's basically antagonizing the league right now. I think he knows what he's doing 100%. Dirty, super dirty.
Mitch, do you like what Draymond's doing?
Yeah, I, first off, shout out to Nate Duncan, one of the best followers on Twitter, who just died on a hill saying that it was not intentional and just faced the wrath of Twitter, just like from all sides. People just unloaded.
Wasn't he posting pictures of people who, like, former players that have kicked up their legs?
Yeah, it was hilarious just because he's such a smart guy. Like, I think he might be probably the smartest basketball guy on the internet, and just defended it to the end. And also, that game was like one of the best games of the season. That was a crazy game. But I've been playing basketball for, you know, 24 years. Not that I'm that great. I've been watching basketball as long. I just haven't seen somebody involved in so many nut shots. Like, just I just haven't seen somebody who's just constantly kicking people in the dick. I mean, just not something that happens all the time. Like, it's like a constant, like, every other week somebody's getting kicked in the dick. Like, I'm sorry. Like, you lose that presumption of innocence after, like, the 12th dude you kicked in the dick. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm weird like that, though.
I think I'm going to wrap up the show before you say dick kick one more time. That'll do it for this episode of The Bull Show. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or stream it on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Bloggable.com, and GoWhereHipHop.com. You can also catch us on Twitter at The Bull Show, at Sharon, ILJP, and, of course, at SBN _ Ricky. For Mitch and Ricky, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bobby Hanson, we see you.